I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network. And this hour of the program, we're going to be talking about teachers in this state and probably teachers in the country. The education reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, Erin Richards, is joining us. Terrific reporter. And she wrote a very interesting piece this week, thinking about teaching, these new Wisconsin programs will train you. We'll be talking about how severe the teacher shortage is in the state of Wisconsin. There are a number of school districts, we've done many shows on this, that are reporting an extreme shortage of key positions. But there are reasons to be a little bit more positive about all of this. And we'll talk about the programs that are allowing brand new educators to get into the teaching profession with Erin, who's a reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, covering K-12 education in urban and suburban Milwaukee, as well as state politics that are related to education issues. Joining us a little bit later in the show, the dean of the College of Education at Marquette University, who's also a professor there, and we'll be speaking with an associate professor at Marquette who's chair of educational policy and leadership. Erin outlined a special program that's taking place at Marquette, and that's one of the things we'll talk about. On top of that, the Washington Post had an interesting article yesterday. It was a big story about the president's first full education budget, which is expected to be released on May 24, which cuts a lot of money from federal education initiatives. We'll talk about the interest that the administration has in charter schools and in voucher schools and the number of cuts that will take place unless Congress doesn't approve these, and there will be pushback, I'm sure, against some of these cuts. So all of that is on the table this hour, and we're welcoming phone calls. Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org. Facebook is the Kathleen Dunn Show, and we're on Twitter, and that's @KDunnShow. Erin, nice to see you again. Hello.
Hi, thanks for inviting me.
Yeah, our pleasure. Why don't we outline first how severe a teacher shortage is in the state of Wisconsin? Is it severe?
Well, you've seen years in Wisconsin where people have talked about a teacher shortage. Often this is teacher shortages in hard-to-fill subjects, often in large urban districts. Math teachers are hard to find. Science teachers are hard to find. Your typical third-grade class teacher position, that's not so hard to find, right? There are a lot of schools that have plenty of people that still are lining up to teach third grade, fourth grade, fifth grade. It's a lot of the harder to fill subjects that are the more critical needs. But what we do know is that overall there is a decline in the number of people enrolling in traditional education schools in Wisconsin. And that makes people that work in schools concerned that down the road, 3, 4, 5, 10 years, that we won't have enough educators to fill the spots that are going to be left by retiring teachers who are in their, you know, 50s and 60s right now.
Mm-hmm. So you outlined in the paper this week some interesting programs that are taking place in this area to train people to be teachers. Some of them are very inventive.
Right. So what we're seeing more now is some innovative programs to turn people who already have a passion and commitment to work in schools into fully certified teachers. So if you've visited a school or if your kid is in school, sometimes you'll visit a school and you'll see that they're, in addition to the full-time teacher and the head of the class, there is a classroom aide in that classroom as well. Classroom aides do everything it sounds like. They assist the teacher. They are often very low paid. It depends on the district. Sometimes they have full-time benefits and sometimes they don't. Mm-hmm. The goal here with some of these new programs is to take people that clearly have a vested interest in education and in working in classrooms and in giving them opportunities to, in some ways, either start their formal college education or, in many ways, complete college education credits that they've already started with a path toward becoming a full-time teacher. So how do you do that? If you're a lower-paid aide, you may not have enough money for education school to begin with. So some of these new programs are trying to find ways for philanthropic dollars to help these people enroll and stay enrolled in an education program Often these are partnerships between traditional education schools at places like Concordia and Cardinal Stritch, partnering with districts or with school networks to say, okay, we see a pipeline here. We can help these people become teachers. The hosting school throws in some dollars. The university cuts the rate of admission or tuition down a bit. And in some cases, they're looking for philanthropic dollars as well to help support a pipeline for classroom aides to become teachers.
Mm-hmm. When you talk about those who have passion, who have expressed an interest, I don't know why this phone is going off. So excuse me one moment. It's my iPad. That's not supposed to ring on my phone. There it goes. Sorry. When you talk about those who have a passion and expressed a commitment, are there enough of those people? Do people find the teaching profession attractive now?
Well, there isn't good academic data on that question. I think if you asked, if we got 20 teachers in this studio right now and asked them, what do you think people think of your profession? I think a lot of them would feel like they're getting beat up on. And maybe if they were in their late teens or early 20s right now, education wouldn't look like a really attractive profession to go into. That being said, education is appealing to a lot of people. It's a highly rewarding profession. The salary is modest. In public schools anyway, there are still, benefits are still fairly decent, although they have been cut back over the years, especially after the Act 10 law passed. But there is a lot of concern in the industry that teaching, that there has to be more done to make teaching look like a profession that people want to go into. So how do you raise the profile of the profession? How do you make teachers feel valued? How do you make this profession look like something that we want people to do because we want our children to have qualified, enthusiastic adults who are highly trained in front of them in the classroom? And I think that's where everybody is stumbling a bit, because nobody really knows how you raise the profile of a profession in a meaningful way, especially after there have been budget cuts and state law changes and, a lot of changes at the federal government as well.
And when you look at where the shortages are most severe, is it in math and science STEM area? Is it in urban education, rural education? Where is it?
So, yes, to some extent, to all of that. Places where turnover tends to be high tend to be urban districts. There is also quite a bit of turnover in rural districts. A lot of times teachers will get their start in rural districts where the pay is fairly low, but they'll look to move up and out of those districts. Certainly with Act 10, reducing the incentive to stay with one district for your whole career. If you are an ambitious teacher and you want to make more money and you are in a hard-to-fill field like bilingual education or certainly math and science fields, special education is a huge one, you can move up and out into another district. You're not held back by this idea of, I've got to stay here to get my retirement benefits. Everyone's a free agent now. So in some ways, that churn is happening because of that ability to move around more freely than before. Certainly in MPS, we've seen a lot of turnover in those hard-to-fill positions as well, and those have, even before Act 10, those positions were tough to fill. They're demanding, and there has always been some difficulty in filling those. But it is happening, I think, to a lesser extent. Your highly funded, wealthier suburban districts are probably they're probably not feeling the pinch as much as the rural and the urban districts.
Mm-hmm. I thought one of the interesting programs that you outlined in your article was this teacher training for high school students. Suburban Milwaukee, you write, districts are exploring ways to attract students to teaching even before they leave high school.
I actually think this is really inventive.
And
it is. I think that sometimes we don't give high school students literally and enough credit for being young and able to think about what they're going to do for their career and to start earning more college credit when they're still in high school. There's been a big push for this in more of the vocational fields. And of course, advanced placement classes can get you college credit as well if you do well on the test. But these are actually programs where you're identifying students in high school, upper-level students, juniors and seniors, and giving them opportunities to take some of the beginning education courses through a partnership with one of the University of Wisconsin schools. So maybe that's one or two classes per those years. And at the same time, they pair you up with a mentor teacher who kind of lets you spend some of your school day shadowing a teacher in terms of shadowing their actual work. And I think that could really go a long way to helping a student figure out, okay, is this program for me? I hope that those programs continue to spotlight or to attract diverse students as well, because we certainly, in the education profession, there's a lot of interest in getting more diverse candidates in front of teachers and to helping those people enter the teaching pipeline. So I think it's we've seen at least a number of the Milwaukee suburban districts in like Waukesha County, Pewaukee High School has a program. New Berlin has started or is starting a program. The Elmbrook schools are starting a program as well. Mm-hmm. And these are all partnerships with the local UW branch that allows these students to get some credit and also get exposed to what the teaching profession could look like for them.
Hmm. I think it's a great idea, because it's wonderful to be able to explore that when you're in high school. And sometimes when you're a senior in high school, you kind of tune out to what's going on, right?
Yeah,
I'm going to graduate. I don't need to really pay
attention. Absolutely. I think it kind of grounds you into the real world a bit and says, hey, by the way, this is still, you know, you're still in it here to eventually get a job and do something meaningful with your life.
Mm-hmm. We have a lot of people calling in already, so let's start taking phone calls for you. We're talking this hour about teaching, the fact that teacher colleges, training programs are not seeing as many people interested in the profession, and Aaron highlighted in a piece on May 17th. Was that just yesterday? The day? It's hard to know what day it is. It's everything. So much is happening every day. Thinking about teaching, her article in the Journal Sentinel, these new Wisconsin programs will train you. We'll spend more time talking about the program at Marquette University a little bit later in the show. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. I know many of you who listen to this show are in the education profession in some way in the state of Wisconsin. What do you think is the answer to a looming teacher shortage already evident in certain fields and in certain districts in the state of Wisconsin? Let's go to Gail in Madison, our first caller for you. Hi, Gail.
Hi. I was just going to say, from my perspective, my husband is a teacher. He's a first-year teacher, and it's not a surprise to me that there's a shortage of people in this profession when you're paying for a four-year degree and then you're required to go through what is basically a half-year unpaid internship, which is very difficult, and then you're working long hours. The day doesn't end at 3. You're grading papers most of the night, and I know that my husband is making less than $30,000 a year for a full-time teaching job, which is not even a living wage. So, and I don't know if it's traditionally, because most teachers have been women, at least in the elementary and middle school level, and their income was seen as supplementary, and so you didn't need to live on it. But I don't think that's the case for a lot of people anymore, and I don't know why people would want to line up for to get a degree in something that is not going to support them, especially when they're then spending the next 10, 20, 30 years paying for it.
What kind of school is he in? Is it a public school in a city area or rural
area? He's actually in a private school.
A private school. Are there big differences in salary, Aaron, between private schools and public schools?
Absolutely. You can still today pretty much guarantee that if you work in a private school, you'll be making, for the most part, less annual salary and far less in benefits than you would in a public system. So that's still why you've seen this pipeline of a lot of teachers who start in a smaller private school. Maybe they really enjoy the freedom, but they just can't live on $30,000 a year. So then you try to move up. And historically in America, the teaching profession has been set up to be pretty low paying at the beginning, and you stay in it long enough, you get steps, you get lane increases, and sort of by the end of your career is when you sort of get the payoffs of teaching, right? You in the old days, you could retire at 55, you had a full health care and benefits depending on what district you're retiring from. So the the profession was sort of backloaded with the benefits, even if the salary wasn't super high. But especially today, I mean, expecting people to take out a lot of loans and debt to attain an education degree and then start out in a profession that only has a starting salary of $30,000, like this caller has referenced in Milwaukee Public Schools, it's still about $41,000 or $42,000 a year for starting salary. And that's still not a lot if you've got, you know, a lot of ambition and a lot of drive and you want to do, you know, sort of great things. That's a modest right. salary to start.
Yeah. Do you think he'll stay with the profession, Gail?
I think he would like to, whether or not it becomes an economic thing that we need to look at something else. It's another story, but we definitely don't want to go back to school and take out any more loans.
Mm-hmm. If I can ask, what is the amount of loans or debt? Like, what was the total cost of getting the education degree?
His actually was relatively affordable because he was able to get some grant money going back to school as an adult student. So he only has maybe $10,000 in student loans, which, I mean, you're still paying on them every month, but combined, his and mine is a different story.
And does he want to go to a public school eventually, Gail? Will that make a difference?
I think he probably would if there were positions out there in our area. I think he would consider that, yeah.
Mm-hmm. What about programs? Has anybody, in this climate, I'm not sure this would happen, but has anybody, Aaron, said, we'll forgive you your student debt if you teach for 5 years?
There have been some proposals to do this in rural areas, especially. It's pretty hard to attract a teacher to a rural area without a whole lot of incentive if they don't already live there. Rural districts tend to rely on people who have grown up in that area to stay there because of, you know, family and social connections. There have been proposals to forgive the loans of teachers who commit to a rural teaching assignment for a certain amount of time. I think that had come across in the last budget, and I don't remember the dollar amount and if that actually passed. It's something we'd have to look at again, but there have been those proposals out there. Ways to try to help people lessen their loan payments or forgive their loans if they would commit to a sort of an unpopular assignment.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much, Gail, for your call. Tony in Madison. Hi, Tony.
Hey, how are you guys?
All right.
Great. So a slightly more novel approach. Most of the Western world has recognized that children are not mini adults. Here in America, we still haven't come to grips with that completely. If we place the importance on the children, there are things out there like the UN has a set of rights for children. And if we could place the importance on the child, on the learner, and push it from that side instead of the importance of the teacher, I think that would allow for more people to understand how important education is for children. Right now in our educational system, we spend a lot of time dictating to kids, telling them what the answer is before they even know what the question is that they, so their problem solving skills aren't always there. We rumble on about their creativity or lack of creativity. I've worked with children for 36 years, and if you put five learners in front of a teacher, you're going to have five different styles of learning. You're going to have five different answers come out. And if you give them the answer before they know the question, their ability to understand or think critically is going to be taken away from them before they even get to start.
But Tony, getting to the point of the hour, which is that we're facing a teacher shortage in certain
yes.
areas in the state.
Yes.
What do we do about that?
You need to place the importance. We need to place the importance on the student so that society understands.
Right,
that
but don't we need
have
teachers?
A lot more to give, and that would be put more importance on bringing in more teachers. Right now, we're using our teachers as gatekeepers. I have a wife who stopped teaching and now works in the libraries in Madison.
Mm-hmm.
I have brothers and sisters that are teachers that have slipped off to private schools and other places because it's just easier to teach that group of kids.
Mm-hmm.
We're telling teachers how to dictate to kids.
Okay, thank you very much for your call. Let's go to David in Milwaukee next. Hi, David.
Hey, Kathleen. Just wanted to call in, provide a personal anecdote, kind of.
Sure.
I have a bachelor's degree in early childhood education from UWM, and I actually chose not to go into teaching after getting my degree, partly because of personal reasons. I kind of found it wasn't exactly for me, but a lot because of financial reasons. I ended up taking a job actually bartending and I work full time doing it, and I have full benefits, and I have
really?
A retirement plan going.
Really?
And it's crazy to me that I was able to look at this and say, wow, this is so much easier of a life path to take than going and teaching. And I think going back to the conversation of the hour of what can be done is, and it sounds so obvious, but it's just like you have to make the profession more attractive for people when choosing a life path to want to go down that path.
Mm-hmm.
I work 40 hours a week, and I do better than I would as a teacher. That probably, you know, your average teacher works 60 hours a week during the school year.
Right.
Between actual class time and out of class. My education was in Milwaukee, so it was a very urban-based district. That's an extremely hard job. The things that your average teacher in Milwaukee takes home with them every day is almost twice as much as they have to do in the classroom.
But what about down the road? Aren't you going to miss somebody saying to you, David, and maybe you're doing this another way, you really changed my life. Your classroom made me, and your teaching made me a better person.
You know, I actually thought about that as well. Yesterday I was listening. I heard you were going to be having this conversation, so I was talking to my girlfriend about it. And my response to that is, yes, absolutely. It's a great profession, but increasingly teachers are expected to be paid on good feelings.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the
mm-hmm.
thought that they're providing
mm-hmm.
for other people, and that's just I think a terrible way that society and realistically our government compensates.
Thank you, David. Aaron, David,
I have a question for you. When you were looking at before you decided to give up on going into an early childhood track after you got your degree, were you looking at the salary comparisons between early childhood education teachers and traditional K-12 teachers?
I guess just where I would have been. So I would have been in probably a kindergarten to third grade classroom.
Right. Oh, okay. So it wasn't, you wouldn't have been in like a preschool or a daycare or something.
No. Yeah. I'm certified to run a daycare, but that was not an interest of mine. And I kind of, half of this really is personal. I kind of through my education found I didn't, it wasn't for me. But then on top of it, I was looking at, I know that your first caller and was talking about the student loan debt, and I was looking at where I was financially, and I was like, oh,
mm-hmm.
and you do make more money than that, what I was looking at.
Thanks, David, very much for your call. We'll take more phone calls in a moment, and joining our conversation momentarily will be Dr. William Henk, who is the Dean of the College of Education and Professor of Literacy at Marquette University. He used to chair the Department of Curriculum and Instruction at Southern Illinois University in Carbondale, and we'll talk to him about what he's seeing at Marquette in terms of being able to fill classroom seats for people who want to go into teaching. And we'll also talk to him about, and to Aaron, about this special program at Marquette, another innovative program that's teaching, training STEM teachers at Marquette University. So all of that's coming up here on the Ideas Network. All right, we have two more guests joining us, and Aaron is staying with us as well. Dr. William Henk, as I said, Dean of the College of Education at Marquette University, and also Professor Ellen Ekman is Associate Professor and Chair of Educational Policy and Leadership at Marquette. They'll talk about the program that is one of several that Aaron outlined in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Dr. Bill Henk, hello. Thanks so much for being with us.
Oh, it's my pleasure, Kathleen. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, nice to have you here. And Professor Ekman, thank you so much for being with us.
Oh, I'm glad to be here.
So how are the numbers at Marquette? Are you seeing dwindling number of students who want to go into education?
Definitely. We had a historic high about 4 or 5 years ago of, you know, young people who were entering the profession. But that has eroded quite a bit over about the last 4 or 5 years, and so in effect we've really put a full court press on to try to get our numbers to come back up, because you know, we happen to believe that Marquette teachers, you know, really are capable of changing the world, and so we want to get as many of them out there to positively affect our children if we possibly can. So we have seen an upturn this past year, which is encouraging. But we still, you know, we'll continue to push so we can get our numbers back up to what our averages tended to be.
And Professor Eggman, when you look at why the numbers went down, you're seeing an upturn now, but it was a downturn. Why?
I think we're seeing it down on the undergraduate. What we're beginning to think, and I think that's where we came in with a very timely grant that we've been working on for about 3 years, is that some students are beginning to think about becoming teachers later in their academic program. So they're not deciding when they're freshmen and sophomores, but when they're in junior and seniors and they're in these STEM fields, they're thinking, maybe I should become a teacher, or we've got career changes. So this grant is looking at producing more science, mathematics, technology, and engineering secondary school, which would be middle school to high school teachers, but looking at people who already have their degree or their content knowledge and developing a program that will help them get their master's degree and their teaching license in a 14-month pathway.
Mm. And tell me more about the program, Dr. Hank. Students receive money in tuition, substantial amount of money, right?
Yes, but I'm going to defer to Dr. Eggman because she's the principal investigator on our National Science Foundation grant for that particular question.
So, sure. So this was the National Science Foundation. It's called the Noyce Scholars Grant. And it comes out of Robert Noyce, who started this grant, is also the founder of Intel and the designer of the chip and the microchips. And he has a strong desire to increase the number of STEM teachers and to produce more scientists and mathematicians and engineers for that kind of field. The design of this is to support people in the field to be preparing to become teachers. So a requirement of the grant is to develop a scholarship program and a stipend to allow people to take the courses and not, as one of your earlier callers then spoke of, they will not come out with a debt. Or if it is for a living cost, it's a different kind.
I see.
So all their tuition will be paid for. They'll earn a stipend while they're here, and they should be ready to get hired immediately after they finish their coursework.
Well, we were talking about salaries a little bit earlier. A caller from Madison said her husband is making less than $30,000 in a private school. Let me ask everybody this, Aaron, as well. Why would somebody want to get a master's in education in a field where you could probably make a whole lot more money, maybe in the science of bartending? No, the other caller was amazing. But you could make a lot of money in a STEM field outside the classroom, couldn't you? Dr. Hank, what do you think?
Yeah, I think it goes back to the direction you took your questioning with the caller, which is, why would somebody go into teaching? And it's because it's a noble profession. And you can, enjoy enormous gratification from working with young people, watching the light of learning go on with them. It's very rewarding. The interpersonal relationships that you develop, they're very priceless. You know, and that's, so we think of being a teacher here, it's more than a job. It's even more than a profession. We like to think of it as a calling. You know, it's how you identify yourself. This is the contribution that you're willing to make to the world, and it will come at some sacrifice to you, and one of those sacrifices is that you might not be paid, you know, nearly the competitive wage that you deserve.
Mm-hmm.
I think something else is also happening in the last few years, at least in the Milwaukee metropolitan area, that would bode well for people who come out with a STEM teaching certification and a master's degree. There is such a high demand that schools are beginning to pay more for their science, mathematics, technology, and engineering teachers. And so they're coming in at higher salaries with a master's degree and with those particular areas. It's happening in some others. So with the change in the climate in the schools, and you're beginning to get some teachers receiving higher starting salaries because they come in with a field that is so highly desired.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Dr. Eggman is exactly right about, you know, the advantages of coming in, you know, being a science, technology, engineering, or a math major. But, you know, to your teacher pipeline thrust in our conversation today, teachers are in demand very generally now. In the past, you know, if you were an English major or you were a social sciences major, your job prospects were quite limited. That is no longer true. Most of our students are graduating, and they'll have jobs if they don't already. because there is that much of a
yes.
demand in the field.
Mm-hmm. And Aaron, you highlighted this program. Dr. Ekman was talking about where the money is coming from. Are many of these innovative programs coming from private funds? And is there a responsibility or a step up on the part of state government or federal government to pour some money into training teachers? Or are we looking exclusively at the private sources of money?
Similar to the program that's in development at Marquette with the National Science Foundation grant, I have seen more of these programs be come about because of private investment in some way, philanthropic donations in some way. There's another very small program in the city that helps train teacher leaders or school building leaders to get a master's degree with a commitment to keep staying in the profession after that. That's also privately funded. I think a big question, though, is how do you, once people complete those programs and they commit to teaching, you know, as Dr. Henk and Dr. Ekman have said, you know, there's you hope that the nobility of the profession makes people want to change. But if you do have to look at a significant salary difference between what you could be doing in private industry and what you're going to make going forward for yourself and your family in the teaching profession, Do we make a larger ask of our state or federal government for funds to help support that? The problem is, I mean, look at the federal budget and where things are going, and look at our state budget and where things are going. You know, I think you'd have a lot of people say, well, the money just isn't there. So it's going to have to come from private dollars.
Mm-hmm. You want to respond to that, Dr. Henk?
Yeah, I think that... I think there's just a sense generally, whether it's private or whether it's, you know, comes through the government, that these STEM-related fields are going to be so important to the future of the United States that they ought to be supported. So I think there's a variety of sources that, you know, are willing to fund these. We look a lot to private foundations if we're not looking to federal grants to see who's willing to do this. And there seems to be an appetite, particularly moving in that direction, which is encouraging.
Mm-hmm. Has the program already started, Dr. Ekman? Do you have students?
Well, we just received the money this month, and it'll begin. The program will begin. We will begin to receive the funding to begin on June, in the month of June. We'll spend the next year recruiting. We have some pretty good ideas of where to be recruiting, and interestingly, since the publicity has gone out, we've already gotten one person writing in about it, and we'll be ready with the new curriculum and the new course descriptions, et cetera, sometime in January so we can start admitting students.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to be recruiting. There's a large number of students who graduate from liberal arts colleges here in Wisconsin with STEM degrees. And we think that this program will be very interesting to them. So we'll be recruiting mostly regionally, and the grant is only designed to start with a seven students and then add seven students each summer. So it's a summer program, 14 mm-hmm. months. I wanted to add a little bit because people were talking about, you know, whether, I think Aaron was talking about whether the attractiveness of the industry would keep people from becoming teachers. What my colleague, Barbara Silverthorne, who's the PI from engineering, has found as an engineering professor is that there are engineers who finish the program and start working in industry and find that they don't fit. This isn't their life work. They know how to do it. They know they can make more money, but this isn't, and I will use Bill Hanks, this isn't their calling. And then they'll come to her as an engineering professor and say, can I become a teacher? I want to teach this, or I might want to become do something else. And that's how we got started on this degree, is that there are people who finish and go to be a chemist in a business industry, and they don't find it satisfying for lots of personal reasons. And then they say, oh, I could do something more with who I am and with my degree.
Mm-hmm. Aaron?
Could this new program be used to help attract engineers looking for a career switch from outside of Milwaukee, or is it really designed to be a regional focus?
Oh, I think we'd be more than glad to attract people wherever. I don't think, you know, I think as we get started and people are interested and want to come over here, we'll be interested in talking to them. Yeah. We'll just start immediately advertising for the students who are graduating from their undergraduate liberal arts schools, but we will be opening, you know, and doing advertisements in lots of places.
Hmm. Let's continue taking phone calls. Our number, and we have some lines open if you'd like to join us, is 800-486-8655. Gail in Watertown is next. Hi, Gail.
Oh, hi. You know, I was thinking, when talking about teachers' starting salaries, it's very hard. We're like talking oranges and apples if we don't include like the benefit information, for example, how much of a prescription they pay and things like that. And so I would think it'd be great if the entire package could be presented and then discussed. And then I do want to say, I know teachers work very, very hard, but we got to keep in mind, so do nurses, I mean, farmers, engineers, restaurant workers. They're all exhausted from their day. And I bet even you, Catherine, right? You work so hard, sometimes you're just exhausted. There's a lot of people working very hard, not just teachers.
Do you think teachers are paid sufficiently?
Well, I know that when it comes to the bottom line, it was felt that teachers were overpaid, and therefore that's what happened with Act 10. Now, whether they're paid sufficiently, that's not something I could really say. I think that they're paid comfortably. It would be nice to see, too, like what age they could retire and how much their retirement would be. You know, there's rumors, because I don't know if it's true, but I heard that on top of what they make, 9% a year gets stashed away for them for when they retire. Now, I'm not sure if that's true. I think it's true, and I don't know how that comes down relating to Social Security and stuff like that, how it would impact it, but there's just so many rumors. How could I even say?
Well, you've got people right here who can tell you, so it's good you're listening. Erin, what are the benefits?
Oh, boy. Those are going to vary from district to district. Mm-hmm. There is more of a, under Act 10, there is a new requirement that teachers have to spend more of their own take-home pay and pay into their benefits. But beyond that, it's a great question, but the benefit structure really varies from district to district. Dr. Henk, you may have a better idea of what some of the current structures are for folks. I'm not sure. I can't immediately answer the 9% question.
Well, my answer would have been very similar to yours, Erin, in that it really varies district to district. And I think, you alluded to this idea that, part of the new funding in the governor's budget for district will be contingent upon their employees paying a percentage of their wages into benefits. I think it's something on the order of 12% on average or something like that.
Yeah, it's close to that. What about the overall salary? I mean, Gail made the point that everybody works pretty hard, so teachers are doing okay. They're comfortable. I'm not sure a lot of teachers would agree with that, not from teachers that I hear. I think that they're having a hard time making ends meet.
I had a friend who just did, this is not an exact comparison, but I did know someone who spent an entire day with a bunch of Harley Davidson employees in a Milwaukee school yesterday teaching the junior achievement curriculum for all day, right? So you teach all of the lessons in this book in one day. It's about 6 hours of class time in front of kids. And those Harley Davidson workers got done at the end of the day and they said, oh my goodness, that's hard to do. That's a lot of time. There's no breaks to get coffee. There's no time for yourself. You are all on all the time. And I think that makes the teaching profession a little bit different than your average profession. I don't mean to elevate it above other really important work, but I think that the amount of energy and sort of ability to be on is critical. But then I also think, I mean, I certainly hear from teachers, and I'd be happy to hear from the Marquette folks as well, but there is a big expectation that you take homework with you and you plan
Absolutely.
At home and you do a lot of stuff in the evening, where at least some of us in the private industry know that when we leave work, we can go home and focus on our kids or hang out with friends.
Yeah. I want to ask all of you, because you're with us this hour, we also have a presidential education budget that's going to be released on May 24. Yesterday's Washington Post had a very big story about what's in this budget, and it calls for significant cuts to education nationally, $10.6 billion from federal education initiatives. It reshapes financial programs that will help students pay for college. it cuts a lot of money for after-school programs for high-poverty districts, and it cuts a substantial amount of money for teacher training, for class size reduction, for child care for low-income parents in college, for arts programs. There will be pushback on this, I'm sure, because there are many people in Congress who are more supportive of public education than the administration is. There's a real push to put more dollars, and there are many more dollars for private and for voucher schools in this particular budget. So put this in a bigger context. If you've got a budget like that that is, some could say, not very committed to public education in this country, doesn't it make what you're trying to do at Marquette University, what everybody's trying to do, really much harder? Aaron?
I think it depends on what side of the fence you're standing on, but I do think that we can say that President Trump, while campaigning, had said that his budget was going to include a lot more initiatives for school choice. That was clear from the pick of Betsy DeVos as education secretary, that this wasn't going to be your run-of-the-mill federal education budget, that some things were going to change. And so I think that the increasing focus on choice initiatives, whether that's dangling more money in front of states potentially and districts to say you can get more federal dollars if you offer more ability for your students to choose a school that's not their zone neighborhood school, is certainly an indication of that. There's even money set aside in this budget for more studies on school choice, which
yes.
I had to smile at a little bit because there's so many studies out there on school choice. I looked at this as delivering on the promise that President Trump made when he was campaigning, that we weren't going to do schools the way we'd always done schools. Dr. Hank, Dr. Ekman, do you guys feel the same?
I
think the problem, the question that Kathleen asked is, what does it do for people who are preparing teachers? We're going to need teachers. And if we don't have an educational system that is strong and values teachers and values the profession of teachers and values education, I mean, what have we done and what will we do and who will be the teachers? What concerns me is who's going to be the teachers.
Yeah, an earlier question that I don't think we really answered was, why are so many fewer young people choosing teaching as a profession? And my answer to that is because as a profession it's been devalued publicly. Mm-hmm. It's one thing to make less money. It's another thing not to feel as though you're respected in your profession. And so when a bill like this gets put forth, I'll tell you one impact it will have is it'll make it harder for us to recruit people to the profession, because it's saying that public education anyway isn't as valued as much as it had been in the past. And, Kathleen, the things that you list about, I'm more concerned about what the effect will be on the public schools, like the after-school programs, the class size reduction, the mental health, the AP coursework, career and technical, arts ed and phys ed, even science and engineering, interesting enough, given the topic, with our National Science Foundation grant. Those kinds of cuts, if they are appropriated that way by Congress, are going to be really, really tough on schools. But, you'd imagine from our standpoint, we're trying to recruit people to the profession.
Right.
And they're not going to be, eligible for loan forgiveness programs. I think it's the Perkins grants that are going to be impacted. So the people come to school and they pay, Marquette tuition. And, to this idea, a lot of people work hard. Well, yeah, but our young people who graduate in business and engineering make a lot more money when they leave. But all our students leave with pretty much the same debt load. Well, who's going to be able to pay their debt load off faster? Well, the people who are making more income. So, young people are smart, and they pick up on these kinds of things. And I see this as it will disincentivize, enrollments in teacher education programs.
More phone calls in a moment. Our number is 800-486-8655. We're talking about a shortage of teachers, extreme shortage in parts of Wisconsin and also nationally. and some new programs that Erin Richards, who covers K through 12 education for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, she wrote about some innovative programs that are attracting people to the teaching profession. And we're speaking with people from Marquette University, where one of those programs is taking place. People who have undergraduate degrees in STEM fields can get their teaching certificate and a master's degree in one of those fields and go right into teaching, because those jobs are needed. Dr. Bill Henk, Dean of the College of Education, Professor at Marquette University. Dr. Ellen Ekman, Associate Professor, Chair of Educational Policy and Leadership at Marquette. All those people are with us. Our phone number, we have a ton of calls. I promise you we'll go to as many as we can in a moment here on the Ideas Network. Let's go to Trish next in Chippewa Falls. Hello, Trish.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Yeah, I was just calling to say that my husband was a teacher. He left the profession and has actually changed professions. He taught for 11 years. And the caller before that said, you know, everybody works hard. Everybody does things. I'm a nurse by profession, and we do all work hard. I have always made more money than my husband made. And my husband had a master's degree. And on top of it, you know, what he has had to pay for continuing education credits, what he had to pay for his master's, he never recouped in what he was getting paid in his as a teacher. And what he experienced through his as that Ken was coming and we were in a rural district, is his budget kept getting cut every year. And by the end, and he taught special ed, is we were actually paying for supplies for his classroom out of our home budget.
Right.
And it was just a really struggle and a frustration. And the kids, it's for the kids, and it's just a hard situation. And now I have, our two children are both going into education. And I will tell you, he has tried to talk them both out of going into education just because of those kinds of things. Not that teaching isn't a great thing, but that it's not... teachers aren't getting the credit they deserve. And, and our son already knows he will be a junior in college next year. He knows he's going to have to take on a second job just to live with what he's going to have for college debt.
And what's your husband doing now, Trish? What did he go into instead of teaching?
He's actually a pastor now.
Oh, he's a pastor?
He's a pastor now, yeah.
That's
he completely changed careers.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. Well, I guess there's an element of being a pastor and being a teacher, too.
Does he get paid more as a pastor?
Yeah, is he paid more, Erin asked?
No, he's not. So it's not worth him for the money. But, So, and our son, in his educational classes, I mean, you talk about your lack of students going into it, he's averaging, his class sizes are 6.
Mm.
So, you know, there definitely is, and we need good students to go into education. But, you know, our son, too, is looking at, he may leave Wisconsin if things don't change in Wisconsin down the road. Mm-hmm. He loves the area, and I, of course, would like him to stay. But.
Right, sure. But there are places, when you go to Minnesota, and teachers make more than they make here. Dr. Henk, you want to respond to that?
Yeah, you know, it's really unfortunate because we hear this story all the time. About people feeling the need to leave the profession because, you know, they just can't make ends meet. In fact, you know, one of the things we're looking at Marquette, you know, in terms of this teacher pipeline, of course, we've increased our efforts to recruit young people to the profession. And I know school districts and, you know, are involved in how do we retain people in the profession? You know, what we can we do, particularly in the first 5 years where we lose a lot of them. We're also losing a lot of mid-career people. And what makes this a real supply and demand challenge is that we're having people retire at historic rates.
Right.
But there's a group out there, and Ellen mentioned one of them, you know, people who are career changers who you can bring into the profession, and we're always open to that possibility. And one thing we just started to explore is this idea of how can we get people who are already have certification and licensure to return to the teaching profession after they've been out for a while. And there really aren't any mechanisms in the United States to do this, whereas in the United Kingdom, New Zealand, Australia, you know, they have formalized programs in order to make this happen, because it's not just like I need to feel, you know, like I'm up to date. There's an emotional part to coming back to being
sure,
a teacher
is.
And some counseling that needs to be involved in that. And, you know, we'd like to be, you know, a pioneer in making that happen.
Yeah. One more phone call. We're almost out of time. I'm sorry, everybody, but at least a comment from Jim from Black River Falls. Hi, Jim.
Hi. Enjoying your program and come from a teaching family. My wife and I are both retired teachers. have a daughter in elementary and in middle school up in Northwest Wisconsin, and I have a daughter that's a professor at Winona State. I guess the comment that I could hear from my colleagues that are still in teaching is, let us teach. There are just too many forms and things that they have to fill out. Continuing education costing money. Trying to get certified for different areas when they've already got some wonderful experience in that area. And just fees upon college education and continued teaching makes them want to get out.
Too many regulations. Is that something to be looked at? Just quickly, let me ask you that. We haven't heard from you, Dr. Ekman.
Yeah, actually, it's interesting. The Department of Public Instruction, with a number of universities and higher ed professionals, are looking at proposals to do just what he suggested.
Mm-hmm.
Easier ways to get licensed in additional fields.
Yeah. Thank you, everybody, so much. I'm afraid we're just out of time. Erin, thank you for all your great reporting. Thanks for being with us. Erin Richards, covering K-12 education in urban and suburban Milwaukee and state politics as they relate to education. Dr. William Hank, thank you very much, sir.
Thank you.
Serves as dean of the College of Education, professor of literacy at Marquette. Professor Ellen Ekman, thank you very much.
Oh, you're welcome.
Associate Professor, Chair of Educational Policy and Leadership at Marquette University. Thanks to Gretchen Brown for producing this interesting and important show, and to Gretchen for on-air production here in Milwaukee. Hour two of our show, we take a look at environmental policy under President Trump. Tomorrow is the last day of the climate change talks. Will the president follow through on a promise he made to pull out of the Paris Climate Agreement, and what would that mean? We will talk about that the second hour of our show. Thanks for listening to this hour. News is coming up next from NPR.